Mr. Lewenden, Reel 20. Right, Mr. Lewenden, if we could just carry on. Major Duffy said he was relying on...
He said he was relying on Newton and Sergeant Sarks, he said, because he said, and of course he said there's one or two younger, of the younger NCOs, he said, in the company. He said, I'm relying on you, he said, because he said, really, he said, by the time we get made up to strength, he said, I think the older hands, as he called it, he said, the older ones, the older hands, will be outnumbered, perhaps. So he said, for that reason, and of course, what he said about the RSM, he said, I have to turn to the likes of you. So he said, I'm hoping that you'll help not just me, but the Sergeant Major as well, because he's going to have to go through this. He doesn't know, and he's got to find out. It makes it easier for him, and so that then the word will soon get round, and we shall soon settle down. So he said, I want you to use, well, not just you, but just and Sergeant Sarks as well, he said, and some of the other NCOs. He said, I shall have a word with Sergeant Sarks, the same as I'm talking to you, and either today or tomorrow. And he said, I shan't say anything to anyone else, but he said, I'm relying especially on you two, he said, because you'll be the ones, really. Of course, you see, I was only a corporal then, and so he said, you'll be the ones, he said, who'll be able to guide these people, tell them, that's going to be your function, he said, and I want you to do that, not for my sake, but for the Sergeant Major's sake as well.
So who became your Sergeant Major then?
Well, that was Chapman. That was Chapman, and of course I didn't know that. He didn't give that away. But
so he was making a choice between those two men.
I don't know. I would think. I don't think he made the choice.
And was the other sergeant also? Did he stay in D Company? Was he part of D?
Oh, that's another point. Yes, and that was the thing. I'll tell you about that in just a minute because there wasn't anything. There's only one more, and Duffy said, "Well, I'm going to have to go quite soon," he said, "because I've got to go to a conference or something." Anyway, he said, "I," that wasn't the confidential bit. He said, "The confidential bit comes now." So he said, "And just remember what I said." He said that I do rely on you, he said, not to talk, and just to, he said, you'll hear it, I shall make it known when time's right, I shall make it known. And he said, it's not really right now, but he says, it's fair to you to know, because he said, you're going to have to put a bit of work in, and you and Matt, and the Sergeant Sarks, he said, and the other, and so they're going to have to put some work in because of these reinforcements coming. And he said, and there's just one more thing. He said, I spoke to you just now about the RSM. He said, and you were on to that. He said, so therefore, he said, we're going to have to find, we shall be here long enough. We're going to have an orderly sergeant, a company orderly sergeant. And he said, I don't need to tell you what is expected of a company orderly sergeant. He said, but you will have to work a little bit harder. And he said, I'm saying you, he said, because you're going to be the first, not the first, he said, you're going to be our first company orderly sergeant here. For as long as we are here, you will be a company orderly sergeant. That's what he told me. He said, the Sergeant Major won't tell you that yet, because he says, I don't know who the Sergeant Major is going to be, but he said, as soon as he knows, he'll tell you. And he said, what you've got to do is to pick out, you've got to have a lance corporal with you, he said, and you're going to pick out, I'll leave it to you to pick out somebody who you know won't let you down, and you can trust him, and you can, you pick out who you want, and you tell the sergeant major who it is. But he said, you'll know about that, because the sergeant major will come to you and ask you. But of course, he still didn't tell you who the sergeant major was. So he said, well, now he said, as far as the confidentiality, he said, well, he said, you may wonder where we go from here. So, and he said, have you thought about anything about it? I said, oh yeah, I have a bit. I said, what do you think? So, I said, well, that's the only thing that frightens me. I said, that doesn't frighten me. I said, but gives me an idea about things. I said, it's the fact that we're a bit close to the water. Oh, you mean? He said, you mean the sea? I said, yes. So he said, oh well. I said, then I suppose that's a thought. He never said no more after that. And then he said, but he said, I can tell you this. He said that when we finished here, when we've got everything sorted out here with the reinforcements and everything, it's going to be a bit of a job. But he said, we should then be moving on. And he said, we've got a lot of training to do. And quick. He said, we've got to be quick. But he said, we've got to do it. And we've never done it before. He said, do something we've never done before. But he said, we're going to have to do it, and we're going to have to do it quick. So he said, that's all I'm going to tell you. And he said, no, I don't want you to tell anyone else. Don't write and tell your wife or anything. He just don't tell anybody. But he said, you'll find out when that's any further on. And he said, I'll trust you, he said, because I know that you've been through this sort of thing, not in other ways, before. So he said, otherwise I wouldn't tell you. But he said, I shall tell Sergeant Sykes pretty much what I've told you. He said, you get on all right with Sergeant Sykes, don't you? I said, oh yeah. So he said, you'll be all right. He said, no doubt Sergeant Sykes will get in touch with you. But he said, don't be surprised, he said, when the Sergeant Major comes to you and says that you're going to be the ordinary sergeant for the duration of the time that we're a bleeder. So he got that worked out. You know, he knew that I knew how Thomason worked, you see. Thomason had a way with him. I'm not saying they were right, he was right. I'm not saying Thomason was right. But a lot of people found it difficult with Thomason. It shouldn't have been, because it was easy to get used to, and you just had to know about it, that's all. You didn't have to be taken by surprise, you know. And he had that this way with him. He wasn't impatient, but if he told you about something once, he didn't expect to tell you about it again.
How did his style differ to Arthur Pearson then? Did they get on with each other?
Well, he was very similar in lots of ways to Pearson.
Were they friends?
Well, I don't know, I suppose.
Or were they rivals? Because they seemed to be.
I wouldn't say that. I would think that they were. I think it was a case of. Between those two, I think it was a case of birds of a feather, really. And see, Pearson was something like Thomason, only in a different sort of way.
The way you've talked about the two of them, it seems that Thomason was a more likeable.
Well, Thomason was. He wasn't difficult to get on with. You see, the trouble with Thomason was that there were too many people who were really, they weren't afraid of him. They were afraid of his rank. That's what they were afraid of. I think I'll give an example of jumping ahead a long way, I know, but this is only an example. Well, say take jumping ahead and being that's
right. Jump ahead.
Jump ahead, they'd be the fight. You sort of go in, you had a central sergeant's mess. Well, you've got some photographs in that book of helping in the sergeant's mess at Vienna. Well, you used to get, there were people there, sergeants and that in there, who used to go in then midday for as say, we called it tipping.
That was a drink?
No, not a drink. It was like a tea and a sandwich. Then you'd have a more substantial dinner at night. But this was midday. And whenever you sit down to a meal, and there would be people there who would purposely perhaps stand up a couple of minutes earlier, wait and see where Thomason was going to land, and then go on the other side of the table or down that end or up that end. You know what I mean?
To get away from him.
Keep away from him. I don't know why. Not really, because there was nothing to be frightened of, Thomason.
So, generally, what was the role, how did you see the role of a sergeant major, of a regimental sergeant major then? What was his function in the battalion?
In the battalion, he was responsible for the ammunition for a start. He had a responsible job there. So, of course, he was never away from battalion headquarters. And,
so he had to get the ammunition up to
That was not just as a simple thing like 303, that was mortar bombs and everything. So he had a plenty on his plate.
So who was your colour sergeant at this stage then?
I'm not sure really. You see, there again the change had been made. There had been a change made there. You see, like I said, there was changes made in all the companies. They were swapping them here and there. They were with one company, and then all of a sudden, somebody would decide that they.
Did people, when people had been switched from company to company, were they sometimes very resentful of the fact that they'd been moved?
Well, in a way, they would, because they would. They would have to more or less start from scratch wherever they went.
And was there any explanation as to why a man?
Well, I suppose somebody interviewed him and told him. I must have done. I don't know who that would have been. I suppose it must have been the company commander of that, whatever company that was.
In your case, you were going back a little bit. You moved from headquarters company to a rifle company.
Yeah.
Did you feel personally that it was a more dangerous, obviously?
Oh yeah, I knew that. Yeah, I knew that. But then I knew that I knew that the day would come when that was going to happen. So I didn't let that sort of thing. I knew I couldn't alter that.
So you just accepted.
Oh yeah.
Now, at Bleeder, what kind of specifically training were you involved in then now, or after you've got your reinforcements?
After Bleeder.
Yeah, what did you actually do then?
Well, we moved on to Berserker then.
And then what happened?
Well, then we had to do the training for the landing craft. That was the training that Duffy was referring to. He didn't tell me it was landing craft, of course.
Could you describe that, what you do, what it involved?
What was training? Well, first of all we had to learn the best way to get off the landing craft. Not get on it, but get off it.
What was the best way?
Well, that we were shown, you see. We were shown that it was American. It was an American landing craft.
Were the crews American?
In the main, yeah, I think they were. In the main, American. In the main, they were American, yeah. You see, they had these two ramps down the side. It was a long, slender sort of boat with the two ramps down the side. Now that going down, but what we had to learn first of all was the best way to get down those ramps, because there was a series of steps. They're only about as deep as that.
And how deep is that? About 6 inches.
Yes, between each step, right. But then don't forget, you got to, when the time came, you would only see your boots for maybe the first two or three steps, and then they're gone. So
into the water.
Well, that's right. That's why we had to go up and down those damn things. You know, we were taken there more or less, spent nearly all day there, and it was up and down, up and down.
So you,
but you had to get to used to the depth of that step. That was vitally important, because once you slipped, that's it, that was it. You couldn't afford to see, all you had was the boat that side, or that side, whichever side you were, and the rope. The rope which went down, you couldn't hang on to, because you got your two hands holding the rifle or whatever above your head. So you had to learn how to get down those steps. That was important, very important.
So did you actually embark on the landing craft for this train, and did you actually go out to sea?
No, I put two landing craft over there. Maybe there's more than two. Probably was more than two. But yes, there was more than two, but I mean, I put them over there, and it was more or less on dry land. I got up as far as I could, and it was pretty well, you sort of stepped off the last step, and you were in just in a little, it was edge of the seafront. So, you know, just sort of ankle deep water.
And you, and in the training, you would have your full equipment?
Oh yeah.
And that was ammunition and weapons and so on.
And your packs and everything. Yeah.
So the first time you tried this, can you describe the first time you got on the landing craft?
Oh, yeah, a shambles really, because you see, our initial training on the landing craft was. We could see the dry land, we could see the beach in front of us, and you then had nothing to worry about. Even when you got down to the bottom, you were only in about 6 inches of water, and that didn't matter. So there was nothing to worry about there. And maybe that when we first, at the moment, I couldn't remember when we first did it, and we were even doing it without wearing equipment or anything. But that was to get, see, that was the important bit, that depth of that step.
So the first time you did it, you didn't have equipment, it was just getting used to walking off the landing craft.
Yeah, that was only to get used to the step.
But you said it was a bit of a shamble, so in what way did it become a shamble?
It was a bit of a shamble. I don't mean that we all made a mess of it, but what I mean is it was something entirely new to us. We'd never even dreamt about that before, let alone.
So it'll be the first time you've been on a ship, obviously, since the troop ship.
Well, since the troop ship, yeah.
I suppose for a lot of people, it'll be the first time you've been on a ship. Probably only the second time you've ever been on a ship.
Very early, yeah.
And what other training were you doing at this stage? With the landing craft, what else were they trying to do?
Well, once you got that into, and got that weighed up, then you would have to be, we had some plan of action once we got on the beach. You see, it wasn't a case of just getting on the beach and running straight ahead. You either had to go left or right or do something, but there was a plan.
So was each, in the training exercise, was each individual man given where they would want to hold that
more or less, you would naturally follow your own platoon, and
So how many men would be on a specific landing craft during the training?
Well, I would think well, say, roughly speaking, I should say, two battalions. I'm only talking about the foot soldiers now. I'm not talking about transport. I mean, the two battalions.
Two battalions, not companies.
You could get two battalions, I think, on one of them. Because you'd be a bit tired, but you'd probably get. I can remember when the landing was done, that the Hampshires were first off, and there were two battalions of Hampshires went off first. But that would have only, I'm only using the figure two because it was the two battalions of Hampshires that was one battalion of Hampshires. But they went one direction, and then when the second battalion came off, according to that book, which is what it says about in the book, they went in the wrong direction, and that is why the Hampshires had so many casualties.
We'll get to that when we actually get to the landings. Mm-hmm. So you were trained how to get off these things, and you were trained. There was a certain way you were supposed to run
on the beach.
Who would actually give you your plan of action? Would that be your platoon commander or your company commander?
Yeah, well, that would be done. That would be, well, I suppose it'd be the CO. He would have to have some plan of action, and he would pass it on to his various company commanders, and they in turn would pass it on to the platoons. But nobody was done any favours. I mean, you were just a number. I mean, if I wanted two platoons for this or one platoon for that, they would just simply send one, and that was it. For any given task, you know.
So, was there any other kind of training that you were doing?
Well, that was as much as we wanted, believe me.
So that was hard enough, just.
Oh yeah, I mean, we rammed into us day in and day out, you know. That was hard work.
So how many times do you think you got on and off the landing ships?
I wouldn't like to say.
But it was certainly several times then.
Oh yeah, Duffy said that when he told me about it. Yeah, well he didn't say because he couldn't get as far as that, but. No.
So you were doing this training. I mean, obviously, was there a feeling that you were obviously going to Italy?
I think there was by that time. Mm. I think there was by that time because by the time we got to Caserta, people had been told the bleeder. I think Duffy would have told us the bleeder.
Now, while you were at Caserta, apparently there was quite a few air raids. Are there any memories of those? German air raids on Caserta?
Yeah, there was one or two. There was nothing really, wasn't very much.
And around about this time in North Africa, apparently Churchill visited North Africa.
Yeah, I believe he did, yeah.
Have you got any memories of that? Apparently the battalion had a line up the road.
Yeah.
As he went past.
Because we did that in Italy for the king.
we'll get to that when we get to it. So you were trained up for the landings. What happened then?
Well, we were.
Was there anything else between then and the actual?
No, we were there. We were in Caserta. We were on the canvas. We knew by that time what we were going to do, and we were on the canvas, and we were literally waiting for orders, really. I mean, we weren't troubled too much. We've had some pretty hard training on the, with the landing craft, and they were satisfied that we could, we became proficient or good enough, and so that was it.
Did you think you were proficient?
Well, I wasn't too happy about it personally, because you know, it's not the fact that when you're walking down like that, when you're going down like that, you're going down that ramp like that. You see, as soon as your feet go and you can't see them, that creates a different sort of feeling altogether, because you've then got to sort of think back to what you were told and what, you know, the best way to go, and you had to do that. That was the only thing. Now, there were cases of people who missed their footing and they just went straight under.
And what happened then to them?
Well, if possible, they were picked up, if it was possible. But, I mean, everybody had their hands full, see?
So
there were no spare hands.
Was that a fear that you might have?
It was, quite apart from the firing that was going on. I mean, Jerry's had people on there that they were firing at.
Oh, we'll get to the actual landing. At this stage, just a general question about all of your time abroad, really. At this stage, at Bleeder, what about the mail service, home letters
that was all sent it.
But was the mail regular throughout your time abroad, or not?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. The longer you stayed in one place, the better it was. And there, for instance, it wasn't too bad at all because we had the access of the sea, we had the access of the air. So therefore, you see, by that time, you see, the airmails were out, and as I say, everything was censored. You couldn't get everything censored, or except the ones that you like to put into a green envelope, which was used to call a green envelope, which you could seal down, which could always be opened. Somebody could always pick one up and open it.
What was the green envelope then? That was,
well, the reason I call it the green envelope was because it was an ordinary buff envelope, and it was round the edges. There was like a green. And like a green, just an ordinary green line, and they called it a green envelope. But what I mean is that if you sent a letter home by airmail, it would probably take between 4 days and a week, perhaps. If you sent it a green envelope, it would probably take 4 weeks. That was the difference, but if there was anything wrong, if the powers that be felt that the green envelope system was being abused, the fact that you could stick that letter down, there was nothing to say that they couldn't pick up a green envelope, any green envelope, open it up and see what was inside it, see what people had written.
So the green envelope, you don't think was censored?
It wasn't censored, no. It could have been, but it wasn't. It wasn't. I mean, I knew people, this was quite a common thing. I didn't have any, if you were sitting in a slip trench or something like that, and you decided to write a letter, which is nothing unusual, you decided to write a letter, and you had a green envelope, you could use, if you didn't have any notepaper, they always had what they called in the compo rations, army form blank. so you could always get hold of a handful of that and write your letter on there, fold it up and put it in a green envelope and stick it down.